What devastated central France 3 centuries ago, a wolfman beast, said those who glanced and dodged this deadly foe. La bête de Gévaudan, from hell some thought this demon came, yet only kids and women killed, no sheep or cattle maimed. Attacks were focused on the head and organs it devoured, more than 100 humans dead, a region wide it scoured. Decapitated victims some, atypical of wolves, and sometimes upright it would run, on feet or paws or hooves. Definitive identity has never been resolved. Perhaps some hybrid canine breed of dog and wolf evolved? Escaped hyena from a zoo? Of some it's been the choice, bone-crushing jaws reputed to possess with laughing voice. La Bête de Gévaudan by Ray Gallucci. Welcome back to this week's episode. This is your ghost of a host with the most, Shanna.
Help, my foot. I need a doctor.
Be quiet.
Is there a doctor in the house?
Not that kind of doctor. You in trouble. To what are you referring, Pukwa PJ?
Well, I think you have an announcement to make.
I don't have an announcement. Do you have an announcement?
I mean, I'm not the doctor in the household.
I mean, technically, I don't think I am either until it's conferred.
Well, until, what, you're hooded? Because, you did it.
This is it, yes.
You did it.
Some colleges don't allow you to use the doctor title until you're actually conferred officially. Mm. But in some countries and some universities, they say, congratulations, doctor, which is what I got.
Hey.
Yes. So last week on Tuesday, I successfully defended my dissertation. It was wonderful. Shout out to my professor, Dr. Stafford, if he is in fact listening. He wants to start his own podcast. I told him to listen to my awesome podcast. So hopefully he does.
He was told of mine and said no.
No, he said, I like to play some board games. And I said, you sound like me. Card games, got it. So Pukwa PJ, thank you. Yes, I am Dr. Shanna now. But not that kind of doctor. Cannot fix your foot.
Yeah.
Did you know, Pukwa PJ, that the werewolf is attached to Easter and the Catholics?
The werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But only in France and Canada and southern Louisiana.
Of course. Well, I mean, French.
Yes. So happy werewolf, I mean happy Easter.
Okay. I'm ready for this. Excited? I'm ready for the wolfing.
This happened
wolfening
beautifully, I just want to say, after our Wendigo episode, because I'd mentioned in passing the Rougarou, and you're like, wait a second, yeah. I know that.
I always thought it was pronounced Wolgaru, though. That's how I was pronounced in my head. Well, I've only ever read it. Well, no, I heard it in an audiobook, too.
Yes.
Anyways.
Just you wait, Henry Higgins, just you wait. So.
First off, real before we get into it, Anthony from Full Send Rejects sent us something, so I'm going to be researching it and make it my little project.
Yes. Yeah. Good, because I have to show him my updates.
So, Anthony, I didn't reply. I'm going to reply now, actually. But yes, I will be looking into that.
Okay, good. My references for this evening are the Canadian Encyclopedia, PelicanStateOfMind.com, HumaToday.com, of course, Tony Urban's novel, Beware the Woods. Visit Cryptoville.com and Wikipedia.
Sorry, Cryptoville.
Cryptoville, yep. So let's talk werewolves, but not the ones in London.
Okay.
Badoom-ching.
Now, are these like... Because I learned there's a difference between werewolves and wolfmen.
Mm-hmm.
Are these werewolves?
Just you wait. Henry Higgins, just you wait.
Okay. Because werewolves are just way cooler in terms of how they look.
Just you wait, Henry Higgins, just you wait. You ready? All right.
I'm ready.
So we are discussing the loup-garou, which translates to wolf man. Because loup, which is spelled L-O-U-P, means wolf. And garou, of course, means man.
Okay.
So this is the French werewolf, which actually has a pretty messed up history from the 1700s. When the French and the Acadians moved from Canada down to Louisiana, their language changed due to the mix of English and French, and of course, Cajun was created. Mm-hmm. Cajun from Acadian. Uh-huh. So Cajun is known to roll off the tongue more easily, like you got molasses in your mouth, to quote The Office.
That's not Cajun, though.
I know. So the pronunciation of Loup-garou was changed, because you can say, like, Loup-garou, Loup-garou. It sounds very pretty.
Okay.
But they pronounce it Loup-garou, Loup-garou.
Okay.
Yeah, so the L changes to an R. And so it actually gets spelled incorrectly, too, because it should just be Loup-garou. Mm-hmm. But you pronounce it, you probably saw it as Loup-garou, I guess is what you said.
No, it's...
How did you pronounce it?
Because in Australia, it's Woolgaroo, which is W-U-L-G-A-R-O-O. Woolgaroo.
Huh. Yeah. Nope. Nowhere close to this. Okay. So anyway, we're going to talk some Cajun werewolves tonight. Mon ami. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I actually wanted to, the poem that I read at the beginning, I wanted to read in the original French, but I was like, Peter's not going to like the original French. So
I don't mind.
Les chaussettes.
Our listeners might be like, what are we listening to?
All right. So I have translated some stuff because I didn't want, I mean, I'm Dr. Shanna, but not everyone speaks French fluently, you know. Anyway, so where did the werewolf lore come from in terms of the French? La Bête de Gévaudan.
Yes.
For some reason, we kind of pronounce it Gévaudan. I don't get it. But La Bête, which means the animal.
Uh-huh.
De Gévaudan, the place. Gévaudan. Okay. So that translates to the beast of Gévaudan, which I'm just pronouncing in American. So the attacks, which covered an area spanning about 56 to 50 miles square, almost a big square.
Yeah.
They were said to have been committed by one or more beasts of a tawny russet color with dark streaks and stripes and a dark stripe down its back.
Hmm.
Which kind of sounds hyena-esque.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hence the quote.
Yep. But it also had a tail longer than a wolf's, ending in a tuft, according to eyewitnesses.
Ending in a tuft.
Right.
I'm picturing like a French poodle, you know, when they're...
Yeah, when they get the lion cut.
When they get
cut.
The style. Yeah.
It's called a lion cut, yeah. Anyway.
It's not a lion.
It was said to attack with formidable teeth and claws and appeared to be the size of a calf or a cow and seemed to fly or bound across fields toward its victims.
It's not big. I thought it'd be... Well, cow, yeah, but calf. I just call that a dog. Right?
Well, that's, yes.
Like a really fast dog.
Well, just you wait.
Okay.
These descriptions from the period could identify the beast as a young lion, a striped hyena, a large wolf, a large dog, or a wolf dog, you know, crossbreed, though its identity is still a subject of debate.
Wow, you like answered that.
Yes. Just you wait, Henry Higgins, just you wait. Anyway, so the Kingdom of France used a considerable amount of wealth in livres and manpower to hunt the animals responsible, including the resources of several nobles, soldiers, royal huntsmen, right? And he goes and he kills the big bad wolf.
Uh-huh.
Just saying.
Okay.
And civilians.
Yeah.
The number of victims differs according to the source, but a 1987 study estimated there had been 210 attacks, resulting in 113 deaths and 49 injuries. 98 of the victims killed were partly eaten. Other sources claim the animal or animals killed between 60 and 100 adults and children and injured more than 30. Victims were often killed by having their throats torn out, which is a common thing with wolves, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they did this big study going through all the different records. 210 attacks, 113 deaths.
Yeah, that's quite a bit.
Silly wolves.
Especially since wolves are like not... natural predators to humans.
Well, maybe.
You know, like against popular or like cultural stories and everything. Like wolves are pretty peaceful around humans. You know, not so much other animals, but yeah.
They're apex predators. So.
Yeah, the only like real attacks of a wolf on a human is usually if they're sick of some kind.
Yeah, or if they're really, really starving.
Yeah, yeah.
So in the 1700s, of course, we're talking, this is about the time that we're trying to get America going. Okay, so we're talking the latter half of the 1700s. The beast was reportedly killing several times before the attacks finally stopped. So, in one story in the midsummer of 1764, a young woman who was tending cattle in the Mirois forest in the eastern part of Gévaudan saw a beast, like wolf, yet not a wolf, come at her. However, the bulls in the herd charged the beast, keeping it at bay. So, hooray! Okay, the bulls saved the day.
You know what other famous Frenchman saw a cryptid? Joseph Bonaparte.
Yeah, I know.
You know what he saw?
Nothing, the because Jersey Devil. He was a liar because he's related to Napoleon. Anyway, so it keeps the wolf at bay, but then they drive it off a second time because it tried to attack again. So the wolves are like, bulls are going to take you down. So you miss the bull, you get the horns. You know what I'm saying?
I was going to say that.
I know, but I got it for you. All right. So anyway, shortly afterward, on June 30th, the beast's first official victim was recorded. It was a 14-year-old lady, child, named Jeanne Boulet, and she was killed near the village of Les Zubach. On July 1st, this victim was buried without sacraments because she could not confess before her death.
Wow.
Those Catholics. Yeah. Those French Catholics were hardcore.
Old school Catholicism is something else.
I like how that made it like into the history. Like, was buried without sacraments because, like, she's fine, but she's not fine.
Yeah.
However, the burial certificate specifies that she was killed by the ferocious beast, which suggests that she was not the first victim. Because
that's interesting.
Mm-hmm, yes. A second victim was reported on August 8th. She was also age 14, and she lived in a hamlet at Masmejon. So, seems like it goes after 14-year-old girls so far. Well, you know, it tend to be people who are out herding cows and sheep, and so usually you had your children doing that, so it makes sense. But from the end of August and into September, other victims were recorded in the Mirois forest or its surroundings. Throughout the remainder of 1764, more attacks were reported in the region. Very soon, terror gripped the populace because the beast was repeatedly preying on lone men, women, and children as they tended livestock in the forest around Gévaudan. Reports note that the beast seemed only to target the victim's head or neck regions. Some witnesses claimed the beast had supernatural abilities.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And actually, one of the amazing, like, supernatural abilities was the ability to, like, bilocate, pretty much, from what I was reading. Because it could be in one location and then a different one, like, almost instantaneously.
Huh.
Like, Mirois Forest and then back to Gévaudan and then back. It was crazy. So.
Huh.
Yeah. So, is this werewolf a saint? I don't know. No.
Let's work to canonize it.
Make sure it gets its holy sacraments. Make sure it confesses before it dies. Just saying. Those French Catholics. But anyway, they believed it could walk on its hind legs and on its feet like humans. They believed the beast performed astounding leaps. They also believed the beast could repel bullets and come back from the dead after being struck and wounded. There were lots of stories of them shooting it, and it would just get up and keep going.
Hmm.
Pretty neat.
It sounds like the creature at Skinwalker Ranch.
Yes. Yep.
You know what it also sounds like, though?
Jersey Devil?
No.
Oh, thank God.
It sounds like a blink dog from Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, boy.
It teleports. It's brown. It's big.
Doesn't look very hairy, though.
It's mean.
Well,
it's got tuft on its tail.
It's got tuft on its tail. Oh, boy. Anyway.
I wonder if someone who's like a fan of werewolves heard this story and is like, I'm going to make this into the game.
The stories continue. With mass hunts organized by the king himself, offering livres if you actually, you know, killed it and brought it back. There's even a story about one girl who stabbed a large wolf with her spear. Almost like Joan of Arc. And fun fact, her name was Jeanne, Marie-Jeanne Vallée. She was about 20 years old, and she was a servant of the parish priest at Pauillac. In the company of other peasant women, they were kind of walking across a footbridge, going to safety, and they're crossing a small stream. The beast just appears. Thankfully.
And asked for a toll before she could cross the bridge.
Can't have no rolls. Anyway, the women took a few steps back, but the beast threw itself on Marie-Jean. The latter managed to plant her spear into its chest. The beast then falls over the footbridge into the river and disappears into the woods. Doesn't die. So again, very, very hard to kill. And so what's interesting is when she mentions that she has stabbed this thing, and the ladies behind her say, yeah, she stabbed this big wolf thing. The guy was just like, oh, there's blood on your spear. Yep, she must have stabbed something. But they couldn't find it.
To which Arnold Schwarzenegger shows up and says, if it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yep, pretty much is what they thought. So 2 years later, so going into 1766 now, dozens more deaths were accounted for. And while Juan Antoine did in fact kill a large wolf, which had a family, which is important for later, it was not the loup-garou. His son took the adult male loup or wolf and to be analyzed because the king wanted like proof that they had killed this wolf man werewolf thing.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So while Antoine's son takes off this male adult, then he organizes a hunt to kill the female and their pups because they realize that this adult male wolf thing had a girlfriend, all right, his mate, and they had two pups. And what's interesting is one of the pups already seemed larger than its mother.
Hmm.
So they're living on that good old stuff. You know what I'm saying? Some good
14-year-old stuff.
Only the brains and the blood in the neck. Is this thing like actually a vampire and a zombie mixed? Oh my gosh. All right. Anyway. So Antoine succeeded in killing the female wolf and one pup, which seemed, like I said, already larger than its mother. At the examination of the pup, it appeared to have a double set of dew claws, which is a hereditary malformation found in Basse Rouge or the Beauceron dog breed. So they're the big kind of streppy black and tan kind of big dogs.
Oh, okay. Like the same, similar to a Burmese?
Not as well. He's a Beauceron. Let me put them.
Oh, those.
Yeah, it's kind of okay. Like a mix. Like if you,
Oh, yeah, almost like a beefy Doberman Pinscher.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, but the double dew claws, it's a very common malformation that comes with that breed.
Mm-hmm.
So they figured, okay, it seems like the wolf got a female mate that was a Beauceron and they had pups, so it's a crossbreed. That's what they assumed.
Okay.
The other pup, though, remember I told you there were four altogether, right? And they got the dad, then they got the mom, they got one pup. They did not kill it, but they assumed it was dead after it retreated behind some rocks. Regardless, this small pack was not a pack of werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone assumed that that creature, that was done. Whatever was killing, whatever animal was out there, they must have got after killing the family.
Gotcha.
Well, alas, they were wrong. So the killing of the creature that eventually marked the end of the attacks is credited to a local hunter named Jean Chastel, who shot it at the slopes of Mont Mouchet during a hunt organized by the Marquis d'Apchire on the 19th of June, 1767. So, was it a werewolf? Was it just a large wolf crossbreed? We don't know.
Hmm.
He did try to take it in and show it to the king, but it's kind of hard to take an animal in the middle of June, July, somewhere without it getting gross and covered in worms.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's pretty stanky.
Yeah.
Pretty stanky.
Yeah, it's good for like a day.
Yeah, not even, yeah. So in any case, there were other wolf attacks, fun fact, throughout Europe and during the most 1700s, but not for this region.
In wolf history, this was the great wolf-human war. It was. We just weren't aware of it.
So, we'll never know for sure, like, if it was a wolf man, if it was a crossbreed, if it was a crazy, humongous, funky-looking wolf. We will never actually know, okay? But we do believe that there was, like, some kind of generalized hysteria about these, like, wolf men because, I mean, there were wolf attacks all over Europe, and especially in the Languedoc region.
Again, they
France.
Were organizing. This was war.
It was. This was the great war to end all wars.
We will have a meeting of the packs. We organize at midnight.
Oh, my. Regardless, as I move on, the story of the Bête de Gévaudan lives on in stories of loup-garou, as I mentioned. According to the Canadian Encyclopedia, traditional tales about the loup-garou are found in French, Canadian, and European folklore. The loup-garou is also called lycanthrope or werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
So to them, they're all the same thing. Okay.
Okay.
A Lu Galhru is generally believed to be a person who can change into an animal form, often as a wolf. Yeah. The Lu Galhru is often a dog. It may also take the form of a calf or a small ox, a pig, a cat, or even an owl.
Okay.
Cooler than our werewolf, just saying.
So, yeah, more of like a shifter.
Mm-hmm. Like the, you see the skinwalker. Ranch, yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Yes, I think that's pretty cool. In origin tales of the Lu Galhru, the Lu Galhru is believed to be a cursed man. Very similar to Skinwalker Ranch.
Okay.
But in the French Canadian, and I'm going to say Catholic tradition, a Lu Galhru is often guilty of not being a good Christian. For example, people who do not confess during Easter could be cursed to become werewolves.
Hmm.
So we got to get ourselves in the confessional. I ain't going to be a werewolf.
Huh.
But that's why I waited till now, because I think it's kind of cool. We're in the Lenten season. We got time. Okay. But specifically, the spell that is cast if you do not confess during Lent, it can last for as long as 101 days.
Oh, my.
It's very specific.
Yeah. One for each Dalmatian.
I guess. It would take hold of the victim every evening. They were then forced to wander the countryside in animal form. The spell might be broken if someone recognized the individual who transformed and could draw blood from the animal.
All right.
So if you are walking around all wolfy and I get some blood out of you, I, ta-da.
So like, let's say this curse takes hold and I'm walking out the door and you just like hit me with a bear trap or something. And then you call me, and then you call me by my name. Right.
But there's more. Neither person could speak of this incident for fear of worse reprisals. Worse things could happen. So, French Canadian folklore, the tale of Lu Galhru is tied to Catholic morality. A religious failing was often linked to the Lu Galhru curse. Only a shedding of blood could free the cursed man, as I mentioned. And here's a fun fact. French Canadian Lu Galhru stories are generally less violent. So the modern day werewolf stories in America are completely different than traditional folktales.
Hmm.
Yes. But if I knew that you were the werewolf, I could never say that out loud because then I could become cursed. I could help you.
Well, after the fact, yeah.
Like, I could never say it afterward.
Yeah. You'd be able to convert me back to human, and then that's it.
Yep.
And then I'd be like, why is my leg in a bear trap in our foyer?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
It's so weird.
Gosh, who set that there?
Why would anyone do that?
Oh my gosh.
Not appropriate. The Lu Galhru, or Rougarou, as we pronounce it in Louisiana, here in America, has many legends, and it forewarns children and adults to be good, or else. Because as I mentioned, you know, there are a lot of Catholic connections to this. Cajun legend says that the beast hunts down Catholics who don't follow the rules of Lent, which is similar to the telling of the stories told in France. But I guess if you are eating meat on a Friday, Rougarou gonna get you.
Hmm.
Yeah. Better take those Lenten appeals correctly.
Ruh-roh.
I'm in danger.
2 weeks ago, I accidentally had a cheesesteak, so... Whoops!
Oh, boy. Well, I think you're okay, though, with your cheesesteak, because the French Catholics claimed that you would be turned into a Lu Galhru if you didn't follow the rules of Lent for 7 consecutive years. So you got, you know, 6 more years to mess up.
Better.
But... it kind of gets this boogeyman kind of feel, too, in the French religion, especially in the Cajun religion, because when I was reading up stories about them, I saw a lot of conversations like what parents would tell their children. So it says, there was also a story that was told to kids that if they didn't do what their parents asked, a Lu Galhru would come and steal them away in the middle of the night. It is said that you can protect yourself against the Rougarou. This is interesting. By laying 13 small objects by your doors. Apparently, a Rougarou, when a human has changed into one, they forget how to count past 12.
Okay.
Yeah, probably because, you know, midnight is when you turn into a werewolf, and that's 12. I don't know. But if they see the 13 objects, they're going to try and count them. They can't count them all because they can't get to 13. So it'll just kind of sit there going, and be perplexed until the sun comes up. So... isn't there a story too, like, about, like, leprechauns and stuff and fairies? And a lot of the fae have those kinds of things. Like, if you gotta throw sand down, they can count sand. And all. There's lots of crazy things like
that. Yeah.
Mischievous kinds of things to stop them from hurting you.
Man, I forgot about that. But yeah, you're right. There are a lot of like weird obsessive tendencies stump them with.
All we know is that all the bad guys out there, all of these monsters are literally just OCDs. So like, we have to fix it.
I would love to do an episode on fairies because they're terrifying.
They are in real life.
Fairies are messed up.
Yes, come away, dear child. Thank you. In the Cajun legends, the creature is said to prowl the swamps around Acadiana and Greater New Orleans and the sugarcane fields and woodlands of the regions. The Oogaroo most often is described as a creature with a human body and the head of a wolf or a dog, similar to the werewolf legend. A common blood-sucking legend says that the Oogaroo is under the spell for 101 days. After that time, the curse is transferred from person to person when the Oogaroo draws another human's blood.
Okay.
So I guess if the werewolf turns into a vampire, it can put its curse on somebody else. You better watch out. During the day, the creature returns to human form. Although acting sickly, the human refrains from telling others of the situation for fear of being killed. Other stories range from the Oogaroo as a rabbit to the Oogaroo being derived from witchcraft. In the latter claim, only a witch can make a Oogaroo, either by turning it into a wolf herself or by cursing others with lycanthropy. Which seems similar to like a skinwalker, but that whole thing like you gotta like do it yourself by like, you know, killing things and eating things and
yeah,
all the crazy things.
Yeah, this is much more involuntary.
Yeah. I don't want to be the Oogaroo.
Too bad. Hope you like fleas.
So, I hope you like fleas. That got me. All right. So, anyway, I'm sure Jackie's laughing now. But when we were talking about, you know, the Wendigo, we were talking about the Ojibwe and everything, all the different Native Americans. So I made sure to go back and look at their stories of the Oogaroo just because I was interested to see the French-Canadian belief kind of get into their lore.
Mm-hmm.
But the Ojibwe is actually up as part of the Great Lakes. So no surprise, they would have talked to French trappers and learned these stories.
Yeah, the French-Canadians and all that.
So I did pull up an article on Wiki in Unnatural World. So it says, according to the article, quote, it is important to note that the Oogaroo is not a native Ojibwe word, nor is it derived from the languages of neighboring Native American peoples. However, it has a striking similarity to the French word for werewolf, loup-garou. It's possible the Turtle Mountain Ojibwe or Chippewa in North Dakota picked up the French name for a hairy human-like being from the influence of French-Canadian trappers and missionaries with whom they had extensive dealings. Somehow that term also has been referenced to their neighbor's stories of Bigfoot, and it goes on to discuss one of their authors who writes about it. But then it says, while the Wendigo is feared, he notes that the Oogaroo is seen as sacred and in tune with Mother Earth, somewhat like Bigfoot legends are today.
Huh.
Right? Yeah, so that's
nothing
weird.
Like a werewolf. Yeah.
Which is weird. So I don't know. But in any case, I wanted to find some more stories about Oogaroos, so I found one in HOMA today, and it's entitled Tales of the Oogaroo Still Haunt Local Memories by Laura McKnight. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I copied out some things that were, like, interesting from locals who were talking about the Oogaroo and how it affected their childhoods, because what an effective way to make your kids be good. Just saying.
Yeah, okay.
So it says, no one can prove whether the monster physically exists, but residents up and down local bayous know the creature as the key ingredient of wild tales whispered and shouted on front porches, or more commonly, as a threat behind solemn warnings for children to get in their homes as darkness fell and mosquitoes swarmed. Trisha Huckins, a Thibodeau resident, said while growing up in La Rose, her family frequently warned her to head home at dusk to escape the wrath of the Oogaroo. And so she said, they would just say to go home before the Oogaroo gets you. We just knew about it. It's just a part of our life. Then once the lost Bilio, no joke, that's his name, an Isle de Jean Charles resident said the stories worried him as a child, but not anymore. They had some Oogaroo back in the old days. I assume that's how he talks.
Usually they're better an Irish accent.
he's got to have that we're going frog hunting accent. They had some Oogaroo back in them old days. Mm-hmm. Usually during the full moon, he said I had never did see one, and he still doesn't want to, though, he added. The creature has even embedded himself into local lingo. When Juliette Henry of HOMA spends a restless night tossing and turning in her bed, she tells people, I made the Oogaroo all night. Like a lot of Terrebonne and La Fourche residents, Henry grew up hearing older family members using the phrase, and now her own children make the rougarou on sleepless nights too. It doesn't sound appropriate.
Yeah, it sounds very awkward.
I made the rougarou. Like no. So if you're having a nightmare, or if you can't sleep, I made the rougarou. Nope.
Oh boy.
It's never gonna happen.
But if you want to hear a really good Louisiana accent, there's a podcast called Spooked, and look up Tales from the Smokehouse. Because that guy's accent, I can listen to him all day.
Talk about going after them frogs.
Going frog gigging. I don't even know what frog gigging is, but man.
You're cutting frogs and you have them frog legs.
Well, yeah, but like the frog gig is like the thing you like catch them with, right? Like,
or you can just watch, you know, The Princess and the Frog.
No, his accent's way better.
I love the fireflies. My Evangeline. Anyway.
Even the guy in The Green Mile, like his accent's just not as good as frog-gigging guy.
Yeah. Anyway. According to Samuel Snoke Brown in his novel Hagridden, which takes place in Louisiana during the Civil War, it quotes, "You tell a soul or even God himself what you seen when the rougarou changes, or even that you met one, and a year ain't passed, you're liable to change to one yourself. So don't be talking about it." So then I decided to go on to Reddit to find some more stories.
Excellent.
Because you know me. So this is on the subreddit /cryptids. The person who created this has since deleted their account.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not
happens
sure.
Often.
Yeah. I hope it's real. So anyway, it says, "So this happened to me a few years ago. I was visiting a friend's house in the Houston River area. That section of the river is pretty swampy, so we were frog hunting that night. It was a full moon."
They were frog gigging.
They were frog gigging.
they're out frog gigging.
It was a full moon, so it made spotting the bullfrogs easier. Super tasty, by the way. Anyway, we were that's in there.
I refuse to believe that.
Anyway, we were wandering down by the riverbank when we heard a sound. All went quiet, not even the crickets chirped. We heard dozens of frogs dive into the water, and we knew then that something was very wrong. Then came a distant growl, like something evil, from the other side of the river. We killed our cue beams, or spotlight, and watched in the direction of the sound. What I saw chilled me to the bone. It was like a massive wolf with patchy black fur, yet no visible skin on its head, only a skull with empty eyes. It appeared to be locked onto another prey, so we shut our lights off and watched for a moment. Looking back, it was really stupid to not flee right then. I ran back into the woods and started running down the river. We decided to dip out and get as far away as possible."
Yeah.
So I'm not sure like if I totally believe that, but it's still pretty cool. But like, none of the pictures and descriptions that I found from France or from the Acadians has it looking with like a skull head. That's more like the Wendigo you see like in drawings now with the antlers.
Or even
I don't understand.
The chupacabra, you know, it's missing hair and all nasty looking.
So in any case, it's interesting. But now I want to read you the rougarou in Louisiana. Out of Tony Urban's Beware of the Woods.
Not a Louisiana accent.
It is now. Georgians can go down to Louisiana. Going down to Bayou. That should have been the cold open. It's just playing the music. Going down to Bayou.
We'll put in post.
All right. So what I like about this story is the eyewitness gives his first and last name. His name is Fred Coates or Cotes. It's
tedious. Give me that cable. We'll play the song while you read
it. No, go away. The area of the sighting, now this is only approximate because he was on Lake Pontchartrain. Love the French. So wonderful. In Norco, Louisiana. Now, the approximate dating of the sighting was March in the year 2000. So we was just little itty-bitty kitties when this happened. We were about 13 about-ish at the time.
Yeah.
Cool. So Fred says, "I think the swamp gets a bad reputation. People get too worried about the gators and snakes, plus all the bugs. So worried that they don't even take a step back to appreciate the untamed beauty of the place. I never had that problem, though. I won't go as far as say I grew up in the swamps, but I spent many a summer day throughout my childhood riding boats through Louisiana's backwaters, usually with my pappy, who taught me how to respect and love that place. Unfortunately, he passed away when I was 12, and with him gone, my folks were content to stay closer to our home in Georgia. See, I got my right accent. With the occasional vacation to the ocean or Disney. I never complained. They're good people and great parents, but I miss the peaceful solitude of the swamps. So, years later, he decides to go there. It says, I was going through my divorce. I decided there was no better place to clear my head than my old stomping grounds near Lake Pontchartrain. And what a vacation that turned out to be. Surrounded by the sounds of nature, I couldn't help but feel like I was transported back in time. It had been decades since I last visited the place, but it was just as beautiful as I remembered it. The swamp was alive with the sounds of wildlife, and the air was thick with the scent of damp earth and decaying vegetation. The humidity was oppressive, and even though it was early in the morning, I could already feel a sweat beginning to form on my skin. But I didn't mind. Listen, that's disgusting.
I do not want to live there.
Never. You see, like, when I watch TV shows, or they're like just sweating, like, within an hour or less of walking outside. Nope.
Yeah, like Lost. They're just sweat stains.
Yes, it's so gross.
You know, 24/7.
I'll take, you know, today there was snow for some reason here after 60 degrees and our flowers are starting to, like, you know, come out of the ground. I will take that as long as it means I'm not sweating when I just walk out my door. Ugh. Anyway, humidity too.
humidity's terrible.
My hair could not take that. This swamp was where I learned to fish. I hoped that being there would bring back some of those happy memories and help me forget about all the pain and stress that I had been feeling since my wife left me. Kind of feel bad for Fred. The first day of my trip was uneventful. I spent most of the day fishing, catching a few catfish and bass, throwing back
the line. Sounds like he's in a quagmire.
Anyway, so, but what's interesting about this is it's the exact opposite of us up here. He says he spent most of the day fishing, catching a few catfish and bass, but he throws the bass back. Here in Pennsylvania, we toss the catfish back and keep the bass and yeah. The trout, so I like them catfish. And generally enjoying the peace and quiet. As the sun began to set, I made my way back to my campsite, stoked up a small fire, and settled down for the night. I cooked up the catfish I'd caught, frying them in some vegetable oil. I threw in a can of potatoes and cracked open a bottle of Bud, and let me assure you, it was a better meal than you'd get in any Michelin-starred restaurant. I don't know. I'd finished off the food and four or five more beers when I heard the howling. It was a sound like nothing I had ever heard before, a throaty bang that seemed to come from the very depths of the swamp. At first, I thought it was just a feral dog, and my imagination was turning into something more threatening, but then the sound came again, louder this time and closer. I'm not easily scared, but I felt a chill run over me, and I realized that something was out there in the darkness. Something that might be watching me, hunting me. I wish I had brought my rifle, but hadn't wanted to be burdened down with it and had left it back at home. So all I could really do was stoke up my fire and hope it was enough to keep whatever was out there from intruding on my camp.
Put some more logs on. It's fine. I'll just sweat some more.
So if I'm going to go like backwoods hunting or like, you know, fishing, I'm still going to bring a gun because there's animals.
Yeah.
And like down south in the swamps, don't they have like panthers down there? We have mountain lions up here.
Yeah.
Don't they have something similar? All right, well, if any of our listeners in Louisiana can tell us, I would really like to know.
I was going to say, like, mountain lions are more woodsy, you know. Yeah. I was going to say sylvan.
Listen, but I don't want to live in the swamps, so I'm not even going to, I'm going to pretend that I have no idea.
Even in our area, mountain lion is very rare. We're more bobcats and coyotes.
Yeah, bobcats are very common. But mountain lions are up, they're in the mountains, but they tend to hide away.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he didn't bring his gun. So just put some more stuff on the fire. We'll be okay. So it says here, as the night wore on, the howls slowed in their frequency and moved further away. Eventually, they stopped altogether. When the sun finally rose, I emerged from my tent, exhausted and a little shaken. I told myself that I had just been paranoid and that there was no such thing as monsters in the swamp, but I couldn't shrug off the feeling that what I'd heard wasn't natural to the environment. Despite my apprehension, I decided to spend another day fishing. Like I was like, I'll stay another day, why not? I figured that the best way to get over my fear was to face them head on and show myself that I was stronger than whatever was out there in the darkness. The day was even hotter and more humid than the one before, and I spent most of it
sounds
waiting.
Like such a great day. Yeah.
I didn't want to go home to the AC. Oh, boy. I spent most of it wading through the shallow waters of the swamp. Ugh. Sorry. Casting my line and trying to catch something.
Picking all the leeches off.
Oh, no. Ugh.
I don't know what that accent was, by the way. I was...
I'm just thinking, like, how gross it was. And I'd be afraid to walk in any kind of water in a swamp because alligators.
Yeah.
I don't know how common it is for them to attack humans, but just in case, I'll stay in the boat. But no matter how many fish I caught, I couldn't get over the feeling that I was being watched. As the sun began to set, I headed back to my campsite and cooked and ate some more fish. I passed on the beers, though. I wanted to have a clear head. Maybe that was my mistake. The howling started again as soon as the sun dipped below the horizon, and that time it was closer, much closer than before. I sat in my tent, heart pounding, listening to the sound of something big moving through the swamp outside. I could hear branches snapping and leaves rustling, and I knew that whatever was out there was much larger than any animal I had ever encountered before. And then suddenly, it was right outside my tent.
Should have built that fire up.
I know, right? Oh, boy. So it says, breathing, snorting, and the sound of something scraping against the fabric of my tent. I knew that I should be terrified and that I should be screaming for help, but I was dumbstruck and unable to move or even breathe. Not that anyone would have been near enough to hear me if I had been able to scream. And then the claws ripped through the tent, and I saw it for the first time. A wolf-like creature stood outside. It had round black eyes that shined brightly, hungry eyes. It stood on two legs, legs that seemed canine with how they bent at the knees and hips. It had a silvery brown coat of fur that I'd guessed to be 3 or 4 inches long. Its snout was elongated like a dog's or a wolf's, and saliva dripped from its mouth as it growled, but took most of my attention were its teeth, long and sharp, perfect for tearing into flesh. Now, the fun thing here is the creature just kind of like stands there and looks at him, and then it seems to realize that this guy is scared of it, and then it backs up and away.
And then it starts doing a stand-up routine to calm him down.
Yeah, it brings out his top hat. Yeah. So it says, it backed away. It turned, strolling toward my fire. It sat on its haunches and ate my leftover fish.
And he said that it walked on two legs, right?
Yeah.
It was, okay.
It ate the fish I'd caught but hadn't got around to cooking after it ate the fish that he had cooked. Ate them, bones and all. Once it finished, it sauntered off into the swamp without so much as a sniff in my direction. I spent the rest of the night in my tent, too afraid to move. All the while, I heard no more howling. I saw no more of the creature. But I didn't sleep a wink either. So, what's funny about all of this is, like, the thing just wanted some fish. So, he just, like, put some on a plate for it and it's fine. He says, I remembered my pappy telling me stories about creatures called rougarous that lived in the swamps. I guess they're similar to what a lot of people would call a werewolf. I always took it to be Cajun folklore, but after what I saw, I wonder if they're all too real. I have also read about dogmen, and that too seems a fair match for the creature I witnessed. So, in any case, once the, you know, the sun comes back up, he leaves. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
So.
I mean, he doesn't really have a tent to stay a third night.
Oh, boy. But he did say it was about 6 feet tall, very broad in the chest, but it tapered at the waist. The legs were muscular, but not extremely large. So he said he guessed it weighed between 150 and 200 pounds, based on that size. Yeah. So. But yeah, I mean, like, hey, it likes fish. Cooked or uncooked. I wonder if he would have preferred the bass.
Yeah, right.
Any comments?
I mean, it sounds like a werewolf. It's a cool story.
You know, a way to stop it from attacking you in France? Je vous salue, Marie, comblée de grâce, le Seigneur est avec vous. It's the Hail Mary in French.
Oh.
I could keep going. Maintenant, à l'heure de notre mort. Don't know what that part means? Maintenant.
Now.
Et à l'heure de notre mort.
Death.
Got death.
So I heard more.
A l'heure de notre. And just at the hour of our death.
Saying slower is not going to help.
Oh. How about le fruit?
Paper? The sheet? Leaf? Leaf.
This is
fun. How about Sainte Marie?
Saint
Marie.
Mary.
Yay! Mère de Dieu?
Sea of something.
No, Mary's mom, too. Mother.
Oh, that kind of mare. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Mother of God. Mère de Dieu. Okay, I'll stop quizzing you in French.
I thought it was deer. For, not deer. Or deer. Do. You said do. Mère de Dieu.
Mère de Dieu.
Mother
it
of
comes
Dieu.
Out, it comes out of the mouth, at the top of your mouth. Dieu. Mère de Dieu.
I thought there was more of a y sound.
Dieu?
Yeah.
You can do that. Dieu?
Yeah. I mean, y'all need to, like,
enunciate
contort them. Your face like that when you
it
say it.
It doesn't feel natural.
Any French listeners out there, you could comment on how good her accent is, but I won't be able to understand whatever you're writing in. So,
can you please tell Mamma's story now with the socks?
So, my grandmother was Lebanese, I believe, and it was a, and she spoke French fluently, because they were a French colony. And anyways, during her final years, she lived in our house. And some days she was lucid, most days she wasn't. And one day I walk up, and she had a bell. And she would ring the bell. She'd ring the bell whenever she needed something. And every afternoon, she always had...
afternoon tea?
No, it was a liqueur. It tastes like black licorice.
You mean anise?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, it tastes like anise, but...
Amaretto? No, that tastes no. Okay.
Yeah, that's good. it'll come to me at some point, I'm sure. Anyways, I brought it up to her, and I put it on her table, and she stands up off her bed, points at my feet, and goes, "Les chaussettes." And I look down like, okay, yeah, I'm wearing socks. Yep, and they're just like white socks. They don't have any designs on them or anything. And she slowly starts walking towards me. Les chaussettes. Les chaussettes. And I'm like backing out of the room now. Like, what is happening? And so I'm like, goodbye. Bye, Mama. See you later.
And that's one word that you would never will forget in French.
I mean, I knew that one anyways. It was an easy one. It's an easy one. Chaussette, yeah. And chaussure. Socks and shoes.
And le carotte. Yeah, that's also an easy one.
And thanks to show and tell, Don Mon Posh.
Don Mon Posh. How about a party in my pants? That was a phrase that we never thought would be said. Anyway, so I think the Rougarou is an interesting story now that I've done more research on it, especially with the French connection. But knowing that it exists all over the world, because I had read that there's stories of it in Australia before you even mentioned the other pronunciation, that it actually popped up. But I was focusing on America, so I didn't even read that part.
Pernod. That's the liquor, by the way.
Pernod.
Yeah. P-E-R-N-O-D.
All right. If it's black licorice flavored, I'm never going to drink it.
No,
so
it's
I don't
terrible.
Care.
Yeah.
It sounds disgusting. Who would want to drink a Jack
Jelly Bean? Sorry, listeners who like black licorice, but it's
the
worst.
Or black jelly beans. That's disgusting. You are wrong. Oh, anyway.
And that's coming from someone who eats tea berry ice cream.
I love tea berry ice cream. It's terrible. It's a completely different flavor.
It's terrible.
It's a completely different flavor.
No, but it's an equally awful flavor.
And someone like Jackie, who lives in California, probably never has had tea berry ice cream.
Tea berry is basically Pepto-Bismol.
No, it is, but it's not.
See, you just said it.
Well, they use tea berry to flavor help, to calm your stomach. So, of course, it's going to be in
it's
things like
Pepto-Bismol.
It's the
same flavor, and it's horrible.
But, like, you can't get tea berry anywhere else. Remember, there was they had tea berry down in Georgia.
Savannah, yeah.
And it tasted terrible. I'm like, this isn't tea berry.
I thought you liked it.
Mm-mm. Oh. I thought it was gross.
Okay.
Because Ray got it, because he wanted to try it. I'm like, that is not the tea berry that we have at home. So, like, because you have to get the berries from up here, you know. Anyway, let's talk about our giveaway really fast, because it's closing pretty soon.
Yep. So. And we have another announcement, too. A public appearance we're making.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Take it away.
Oh, okay. So, April 13th, any Pennsylvania residents, set your calendars because we're going to be at Helix Tabletop Gaming Guild in Bloomsburg.
1 month from now-ish.
Yeah. So it starts at 11. They open up and it runs until 11.
Yeah, boy.
Last time we were there until about 9. Mm-hmm. I would like to do the full 11 to 11, but no one else wanted to stay with me. So
we all want to go home.
I was having a great time. Like, I want to play more games. but, you know, even if you're not someone who plays games, just come hang out and share some spooky stories with us.
I want stories. I need ideas.
Yeah. And we'll tell our spooky stories.
Give
you know,
us
it's
your
all
deeds
you.
And we'll bring you on the website.
We all,
on the,
yeah.
On the podcast. I'm
we're gonna,
not tired.
We're going to do like some live streaming. We talked about maybe like recording an episode mm-hmm. there in the. Like doing a live episode. So yeah, we have some options. We still have to work out the fine details and everything, but yeah, we have a lot of plans, a lot of fun stuff ready to go for that
please
day.
Please come visit us.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a great time mm-hmm. in August when we did it before. Met and a lot of really cool people.
It's helping the...
The Janet Weiss Children's Children's Museum.
I always said too,
the
thank
Janet
you.
Weiss Children's Hospital. So
yeah, it's a good place to give your money.
Yeah.
Those kids need all the help they can get. And the families that are there with their children for mm-hmm. months on end, sometimes even a year or two. You know, it's scary.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's good to be there and help out any way you can.
Yeah.
And Helix is a great family-owned business, and they are wonderful people.
And they have the greatest blueberry tea you'll ever taste.
Oh my gosh, they do. So good.
If you've been to the Bloomsburg Fair, again, Pennsylvania residents, and you've had like that blueberry tea... You know, it's them. They're the ones yep. who make it. So if you want some really good iced tea, mm-hmm. yeah, you want to go. You want to go there.
So in any case, get your name in for the giveaway. We're going to be drawing names, I don't know, soon. We haven't figured out a full date, but it's been going on for about 2 weeks now. So
I was thinking Easter weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We could do an Easter egg, a little basket. Can I send an Easter egg, too?
Sure.
Yes. Awesome. All right. So get your names in somewhere. I get to do Easter stuff now. Maybe I'll do like an Easter bunny hat on a Mothman or something. I'll figure it out.
A creepy bunny. The Monty Python bunny.
No, that one's just horrifying. That's too scary even
it's
for
too
us.
Scary.
It's too scary. All right. Well, in any case, have a lovely week, listeners. And as always, think spooky thoughts. By 8:30, the sky was dark red, as if we were driving toward a bayou on Mars. They call it a blood scent, said Roger. And the sky turns that color, insects and animals come out in droves, especially the ones that lust after the smell of blood. The mosquitoes, the biting flies, chiggers, gnats, gators, and wolverines and wolves, rougarous, they call them around here. Margot Berwin, Scent of Darkness.